Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello there, how are you doing? There may be a few new listeners this week as we're covering a topic that I haven't discussed previously. As you know, whether you have been here countless times before, just dip your toe in, or if this is your first time, you are so, so welcome. And I really, really hope that you enjoy this podcast. And there's a whole back catalogue to listen to as well. So please go and check them out. It has been quite a week here at Bobcat Mansions because we shared recently that we are planning to transfer our last and final embryo. It's not going to happen until the summer, like I said in the last episode. And I don't know how much or how quickly I'll talk about stuff, but I have planned some lives over the coming weeks. And it's kind of more retrospectively, I guess, it's covering some of the stuff that we've been thinking about over the last few weeks, few months. And one of those is what happens to our embryos if we don't use them. And this can affect so many people, people who have been able to complete their family as they want, but might have embryos left over, so to speak, or people who decide that they don't want to continue at whatever stage, for whatever reason, and then need to think about letting go of their embryos. So that is going to take place. It's going to be an Insta Live on Wednesday, the 28th of April at 12:30. That's UK time. Obviously, I will put reminders on Instagram. I'm going to be chatting with Christiana, who's an embryologist, and she is at nurture.hf if you want to go and check her out. She provides loads and loads of information about IVF and embryos and all of that. So if you are thinking what your next steps are, highly recommend make sure you join us for the actual live. On to today's episode, which is a really tough one, but also an amazing one. And I really wanted to talk to Lorna about all that she has been going through with little Immy, and not only because it will help to raise awareness of childhood cancer, but also because I wanted to have a general conversation, I guess, about illness and difficult diagnoses in babies and children. I know that there has been a lot more of this conversation recently due to the heartbreaking news shared by Ashley Kane and his girlfriend about their daughter Azalea, who at just 8 months old has been given days to live due to her battle with leukemia. And honestly, it's just horrible. I can't even just saying it. And I know so many of you have been affected by this story, and all of our thoughts and love are with that family. Now, what's happening to that family is incredibly heartbreaking. However, there are also so many others who are receiving diagnosis of different illnesses and disabilities that might not be life-threatening. It's so important not to compare, because everybody's pain and difficult, you know, things that we have to deal with, they're all different, but they're all valid. And you'll hear me and Lorna talk about the fact that when we have our little ones, we want them to live easy, happy, fulfilled lives with nothing holding them back. And we all know, unfortunately, that life isn't always like that. And that can be difficult. And dealing with that and coming to terms with that can take time, whatever the diagnosis might be. In our house, we've been dealing with some things with Ren, and I have chosen not to share them so far, in part because we're still working out, you know, what's going on, and in other part because there is a bit of me that feels like this is her story to tell rather than mine. But I also want to be honest and authentic and share with you guys, because I feel like I've been a bit quiet recently in some ways, and a bit holding back. And some of it's because I've been dealing with this. Some of it's because we've been dealing with our decision about the final embryo. It's just, yeah, there's been a lot going on. So many of you know that Ren didn't walk until she was 18 months old. And it did turn out that there was a reason for that. And it's because she's hypermobile, and also because she overpronates significantly. So that's kind of, she walks right on her her arches, or children don't actually get arches until they're about 4 or 5 years old, but what would be arches, she really, really walks kind of inwards on them. And I talk a little bit more about that within the chat with Lorna. Initially, we saw a private neurophysio who we will definitely stay in touch with, but she's now being seen by the NHS, which is amazing. And in addition to that, she has also been diagnosed with low muscle tone, which hopefully won't hold her back, but it does mean that she gets tired quicker than another child her age might. And then on top of that, she has been having some dizzy spells, only two that I've actually caught. And we've been to see the pediatric ear, nose and throat specialist, who has now referred her to have a full hearing assessment. We know that she can hear, but I guess there might be more to it than that, really. Because dizziness, you know, and motion sickness, that kind of thing, can be affected by kind of things that go on within your ear system. He's also referred her to a pediatric neurologist, which is a little bit frightening. And there has been talk of MRIs, but we're going to try and avoid that if possible. And hopefully this is something that, you know, she will grow out of, that isn't significant. We know that cognitively she is really bright, and we keep being told that, you know, she knows all her colors, she can identify shapes. And, you know, for a 2-year-old, or not even 2-year-old, like, there's a lot that is really amazing, but there are some things that, yeah, we're just working out as we go along. It does mean that we have been going back and forth to the doctors and to the hospital a lot over the last few months, and will continue for now to do so. But hopefully we'll get some answers over the next few weeks and all will be well. Anywho, I guess I'm telling you this now because the point of this episode is that I know that there are lots of people out there who are coming to terms with issues that their little ones are dealing with. And it can be really hard, and it can really affect us. And whether we choose to share or not is entirely up to us. But I just want you to know that if there are things that you're dealing with, you really, really, really aren't alone. And I am here if you need me. And we had a really good conversation in the Finally Parenting support group over in the Hangout recently about this, and how it can affect us, and how difficult it is, and where we get information from. And it's just, yeah, it was just really important that we were all there for each other. And I want you to know that that is there for you if you want it. And I am here for you. So yeah. I don't know if you can tell that I wasn't quite sure how to say any of this, but there, it's done. I'm not going to edit it. I'm just going to, that is it. Please know that you are not alone. And please know that I am usually much more succinct when I do these chats before the interviews. I'm just finding this one a little bit hard for some reason. But right. We're going to cut to the normal. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. It really does help it to reach more people, and more people who need this support. I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who follows me on Instagram, because I cracked the 10K. Whoop, whoop. So lots of swipe ups incoming. And yeah, just say thanks so much to Lorna for talking to me, and so much love to you, because I know that recently you have had some more difficult news. And yeah, just, we are here, we are supporting you, we are right behind Team Immy. And yeah, just lots and lots of love. Take care. Bye bye. Before we start, time for a quick ad break. Knowing your fertile days are so important if you are trying to get pregnant or trying to avoid it. With the Mirror Fertility Tracker, you will know your fertile window up to 6 days. It is the only tracker on the market that provides you an accurate and personalized ovulation analysis by tracking your LH and estrogen hormone levels. Find out more at mirrorcare.com. There's a link in the show notes, and get £25 off your tracker with the code FINALLYPREGNANT. Hi there, Lorna. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. We're kind of smiling a bit because we're just getting over a little technical, what's the word? Penny drop, perhaps, which is all good. But fortunately, you know, I'm really pleased to, call you a friend, I guess. So it's really nice to have a chat with you. We've known each other for probably a few years now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, up to 3 years now. It's been a while.
Yeah. I think the first time we met, was it a dinner in Wales?
Yeah, you came down to South Wales, I think, didn't you? And there was a group of us that all met. And I remember being absolutely terrified to meet people that I'd never met before. And I had it all on my phone to like ring my other half in case I needed to escape. And it was just so lovely.
It was so lovely. We ate pizza, drank wine, and just generally bonded, didn't we? I'm still definitely very much in touch with, I think, pretty much everyone from that group. And because you live down that way, like, you see those people a lot, don't
you?
Yeah,
in non-COVID times, we meet up quite a lot with a good few of them. So it was definitely a starting point.
Oh, and I guess that's just like not intended, but a total shout out to meetups. Like, go when you can.
Or do people, find your gang. And yeah, go with it.
Exactly, because it makes all the difference. It really does. And that is what this podcast is about as a whole, but also about the conversation we're going to be having today. Now, it'll be really amazing if you would mind sharing your kind of journey to, you do have your daughter Imogen, who is amazing.
Yeah,
but if you could talk about your journey to parenthood, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. So we started trying to have a family in beginning of 2017. I think like most people, I had a bit of a plan in my head of we'd get our house, we had our dog, and my next step on the list was to have a baby. And we're actually really lucky to fall pregnant relatively quickly and relatively easily in 2017. And unfortunately went on to lose the pregnancy quite early on. And that was obviously absolutely devastating. But on one hand, I kind of just thought, oh, it's just one of those things. We're one in four. We were just one of the unlucky ones. So we continued trying, we picked ourselves up and dusted ourselves off. And again, we fell pregnant relatively easily, again, sort of towards the end of 2017. But unfortunately, again, we lost the pregnancy in the first trimester. And I think that time it hit us a lot harder because suddenly we were part of a much smaller statistic rather than just being the one in four. It suddenly sort of dawned on us that this might not have been the easiest thing that you expect it to be. That was tricky. It was hard to kind of process, but we thought, right, we're going to keep going. You know, we'd really like to have a family. And I was quite determined. I'm sure lots of people that are trying for a family know how all consuming it gets, how quickly it gets to that point as well. So the next 18 months we spent again trying to fall pregnant with no success. And we began to sort of question what was going on, whether it was something to do with either myself or my other half, Mike, whether we were just unlucky or whether we needed to kind of go and speak to a doctor and have some tests. So it got to sort of the end of 2018. So it had been a good sort of year and a bit since our second pregnancy. And we spoke to a doctor who referred us on to the normal fertility test to check whether everything was working. They came back relatively normal. They didn't find any big milestone problem, any reason why we were struggling, but they did refer us on to IVF. So I think, to be honest, that was a relief. I think I'd spent so long wondering, you know, whether we were going to just be left to our own devices and swept under a rug, that when we got to be able to be referred for treatment, that was kind of a really positive move for us, and we were really keen to get started. It was almost like the excitement came back a little bit. So yeah, we went into 2019 and had our first round of IVF, I think in the April, which actually went really well. And we were lucky enough to fall pregnant, which we weren't really expecting. We'd heard a lot of stories of IVF and how, you know, it is a really difficult process and it doesn't guarantee you a baby at all. So we were really shocked, but obviously absolutely over the moon. We went for an early scan at 6 weeks and saw a heartbeat, which was incredible. I'll never, ever forget that moment. And then in the week that followed, unfortunately, my symptoms started to disappear, which had happened looking back in our first two pregnancy losses. And so naturally, your paranoia comes out and I started to get really worried. So we booked for a second reassurance scan where, unfortunately, we were told that the pregnancy, it hadn't progressed and that the heartbeat had stopped. And that was, I don't want to say so much harder than our other pregnancy losses. It was a different kind of hard. There'd been such a build up to getting pregnant this time, and we'd seen this heartbeat and we'd bonded with this embryo from the moment it was conceived and put together, and we'd seen it on the screen, and it had been such an incredible experience that to lose that was absolutely devastating. And it took us quite a long time to pick ourselves up from that. There was a lot of soul searching and a lot of wine was drunk before we decided to go for round two. In our first round, we didn't have anything for the freezer, so it was kind of one shot, and then we'd have to go through the whole process again. So we went for round two in October 2019, and again, quite a similar experience. We were quite lucky that we got a couple of eggs this time. However, it was an unsuccessful round and we didn't fall pregnant, which again was a bit of a shock because we'd got quite used to this point, my body being able to fall pregnant with a little bit of help, but not be able to sustain them. So to find that it hadn't worked at all was a little bit of a curveball that I hadn't really put much thought into.
I really get that, actually. Sorry, that's the first time that's come up, really. I got pregnant my first two rounds of fresh IVF. The two frozens I didn't, but you know, I felt like fresh IVF got me pregnant. And then we took a break after my second miscarriage, and then we had another round. And do you know what? I totally agree. Like getting that negative test, I was prepared for a miscarriage. Yeah, but I had not been prepared for that negative test at all. It absolutely.
It throws you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think that was, it was possibly, I mean, we weren't in a great place at the beginning, so it was really hard, but it just threw me completely. I just hadn't planned for it. I hadn't prepared myself for it at all. And it was really difficult to pick up from. And I spoke to myself and my other half, and we both just said, look, we need a break. This isn't doing our mental health any good. We were due to get married in April the following year. So we just sort of went, let's just scratch it on the head for a little bit, give ourselves some time to get ourselves back and then look into it in 2020 in the summer. And so we kind of just, I was going to say popped it to the back of our minds. That is not true at all. That's not something you can do. Anyone that's trying for a family knows that that's never going to happen. But we just put it on the back burner and thought we can't, you know, we need to focus on ourselves for a little bit. And then in January 2020, we were incredibly lucky to find out that we'd actually fallen pregnant naturally. And I know that's actually going to be quite hard for a lot of people to hear, because that's one of those elusive stories that your cousins, friends, sisters, auntie tells you, that they know someone who went through IVF and then fell pregnant naturally. And I don't believe for a second that it's because we relaxed or that we didn't think about it, because neither of those things are true. We were just really, really lucky. And yeah, and that turned out to be our Imogen.
Oh, wonderful. And so talk to us about that pregnancy, because not only are you pregnant after fertility treatment and loss, and this is a natural pregnancy, and I know that that can come with some kind of imposter syndrome as well, something that is discussed in our hangout with the members. You know, sometimes some people come into the hangout quite tentatively, like, oh, this is a natural pregnancy, you know, feeling nervous about it because of that imposter syndrome. So that's, you know, there's quite a lot of emotions going on there. And then January 2020, you know, 2020, the year that will always be the pandemic. Exactly. You have to experience that whilst going through a pandemic. So talk to us a bit about your pregnancy, if you would.
Yeah. So I think from the moment we found out we were pregnant, my first reaction was absolute terror. There was joy in there somewhere, but it took a while to arrive. I sat on the toilet bawling my eyes out because I just thought, I cannot go through another loss. And I think that's the crux of it, is that I didn't ever think that we'd be lucky enough to bring this pregnancy home. I immediately thought, oh God, right, prepare for a couple of months' time, we're going to lose this pregnancy. And so we straight away got on the phone to our clinic, who were amazing despite it not being an IVF pregnancy, and sorted out some medication. And we got in touch with absolute angel of a recurrent miscarriage consultant. I love her, and I credit her for keeping me sane in that first trimester, because she was amazing. I can't put it into words. So we were lucky enough to be under the recurrent miscarriage consultant, who saw us for scans at 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 14 weeks. We had a lot of scans in the build up, and every single one, I was in tears beforehand. They were held at the early pregnancy unit at my local hospital, where we'd actually lost both of our previous pregnancies, our first and our second. Actually, and our third. Yeah. So it was quite a triggering place to be. And she always put me at ease the minute I got in. As soon as she popped the ultrasound wand, I guess, either on my stomach or lovely Wanda. As soon as she did that, straight away, she'd say heartbeat. There was no fussing around, no sort of silence. She just made sure she told us straight away that baby was still there.
That and is what going. You want, isn't it?
Oh my goodness. That is exactly, that is just what you need. Anyone that's kind of been there knows that you don't care about anything else. You just want to know that they're still in there and wriggling away.
And I used to ask that every time. I would say, you know, like, just tell me there's a heartbeat and then crack on with whatever you need to do, yeah. You know, every time. Because I was the same. We had weekly, averaging a week to 10-day scans. And I was in tears 9 times out of 10 getting on the table. But yeah, ask. Do not be afraid to ask, you know, Let me know there's a heartbeat. And then
they can sort out what they need to sort out and do any measurements they need. But yeah, otherwise you're just going to be there sobbing on a table and they're not going to be able to concentrate at all. So it's definitely worth them doing that bit first. So yeah, so we had a lot of scans. We were meant to have a couple more, but then it hit sort of March and COVID struck, which obviously it's awful timing for everyone. But we'd been really lucky that we'd been able to get those early scans in, because obviously there's so many women that fell pregnant around March that weren't able to get to that point. So we felt really lucky that we'd been able to have that reassurance early on. I then remember the anxiety ramping up quite a lot in the second trimester when my sickness fell and died down and I started feeling a bit more normal. And obviously then we didn't have any scans until 20 weeks. So there was this huge section where you don't really feel very pregnant at all. And I think that was one of the toughest points in a different way, in a way that I hadn't expected, sort of reaching that 20-week scan and then finally being able to see our daughter in there. I say we, obviously because of COVID, Mike wasn't allowed in, which is a different kind of hard. So many women, I mean, I could go straight into that for hours about how many women and men are just left behind waiting to hear how their pregnancy is and waiting in car parks. And it's horrendous. But I think that's for another day.
Am I right in thinking that you have written about that for a new book that's come out?
Yeah. So there's a book it's an ebook. It's called Born in Lockdown. It was actually released yesterday.
Yes.
And it's a collection of 277 women's stories, brief snippets, about 50 words each, about how they found being pregnant, giving birth and parenting in the middle of a pandemic. And there is so much in there about people's experiences of scans alone and giving birth either alone or with their partners only just getting there. It's also uplifting. They talk about the support that they received. It's not all complaining about the situation. There are some really uplifting pieces. But if you're either pregnant or parenting and have been over the last year, I'd give it a read. It is free. Although I think the Mothership Project is asking for donations to SANS UK, who they're raising money for, if you do download it. But yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Brilliant. Because I know that people who are pregnant during lockdown and especially parenting in those early stages, I think all parenting has been obviously compromised and difficult because of it. It's like with everything, isn't it? Is that there's that bond of people who have gone through that experience together. And I think that might be really important for people to have that opportunity to read it. Yeah. And well done you for being involved in that.
No, you're fine. There's a bit of shared unity there.
Absolutely. So you have your 20-week scan on your own.
Yeah, all was well, thankfully. And yeah, it was really good. And I think it was at this point that thinking back to the imposter syndrome, that I started to let people know that it wasn't an IVF pregnancy. I think I'd almost kept it quiet on purpose a little bit until then, not to deceive anyone, but just because I felt very much like people would go, oh gosh, here we go, another one that's just fallen pregnant naturally, despite obviously everything that we went through. And thinking about it now, that wouldn't have been the case. There's so many people that are so, so supportive, but having been in that situation, I know how hard it is to hear about people who do magically fall pregnant despite treatment. So I was quite conscious of that. And even now, I think this is the first time I've properly spoken about it, you know, it being a natural pregnancy. So yeah, I think I had to work through quite a little bit of that for a while. But the responses that I got from anything I put up online or the people that I spoke to were really positive, and it made me feel a little bit more comfortable about sort of sharing this pregnancy. And actually, we had quite a relatively easy pregnancy. It was full of anxiety, but it was a textbook pregnancy. We had a couple more scans towards the end of the pregnancy just to keep an eye on everything. They were organised by their recurrent miscarriage consultant again, and it was all progressing really, really well, to the point where we were lucky enough to give birth a day before her due date, which I'll forever be thankful to her for, because I think I was done waiting by that point.
Just wanted her in your arms.
Oh, I did. I think it got to about 37 weeks, and I thought, right, she's fully cooked. She'd be safe if she arrives. I need her here now. And it was a switch had turned at that point, and I just was desperate just to hold her and to know that she was here and she was safe. And even now, oh, I'm getting a bit emotional thinking about it.
No, I totally get it. I was talking to Sophie from Mama Made for one of the other episodes, and I had that conversation with her because she let her pregnancy go on to 42 weeks.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, I literally asked her this question. I was like, what was that time like? Because I was induced at 39, and that was my kind of medical instruction and that kind of thing. But there's a bit of me that really would have liked to have let it go and to see when Ren wanted to arrive. But I don't think I was brave enough, because I just wanted her in my arms, you know? Yeah. So I totally get that completely. And I think the people who do let it go over, like, genuinely, I just think that's so brave. And
they're super women, aren't they?
They really are. And, you know, like, it's all good and everyone is different, and speak to your medical professionals, you know, like, this is not a judgment one way or the other, 100% not. But I totally, yeah, I admire people who do, but I completely understand, you know, like, and yes. I'm sure it's actually a bit of both as well. Even if you do let it go over, you're still looking forward to them in your arms, aren't you? Let's face it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I get it. I hear you saying that.
So yeah, that was our pregnancy. I mean, like I said, it was textbook as far as they go, but it was also full of anxiety and full of COVID restrictions and full of bits I'd never, ever thought we'd be facing, but just a lot of gratitude as well for being able to be pregnant. There was just so much gratitude there for actually being able to experience it in whatever form it was, even if we were locked in the house for most of it.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I definitely do. And so Immy is born, for all intents and purposes, happy, healthy, you know,
happy and
bring
healthy.
Her home. Yeah. And as we know, now it's, let me get this right, retinoblastoma, is that right?
Yeah. Bilateral retinoblastoma. So it's a little bit of a mouthful.
And so at what point did you think that something was up, or was it identified at the hospital? Like, talk to me about that.
So we had absolutely no inkling that there was anything wrong for quite a long time. I say a long time, not really that long in the grand scheme of things, but it wasn't until about 7 weeks that we realised that one of her eyes was developing slightly differently to the other. And as a new mum, as new parents, we didn't really know what to expect. There's a lot of talk about baby not being able to see very much at first. And it's quite normal, I think, for babies to have a little bit of a squint for a little bit. But at 7 weeks, we noticed that her right eye, it had a white dot in it in quite a lot of lights. It wasn't just in pictures. And that got worse over a few days. So I actually, despite having our 8 week check that week, I booked in with a doctor a couple of days earlier because I just had scared myself with Dr. Google, as you do with most things in life. And we took her in to see the doctor, who was amazing. And naturally, Imogen cried the whole way through the appointment, so she couldn't actually see her eyes. I had lots of photos and videos, though, to show her. And she agreed that there was something not quite right there. she asked me to email those pictures to her, which she then forwarded on to our local consultant in Cardiff. And we had an appointment about 10 days later to see him at the Children's Hospital there. And I remember on the morning of the appointment saying to Mike, my other half, I said, don't worry, you won't be able to be there in with us anyway, because obviously it's only one parent for any appointment. You stay at home, have a chill. I'll let you know when we're there. I'll let you know when we're coming home. You know, wasn't bothered at all. Didn't really think too much of it. And thankfully he said, no, I'm going to be there. I'm going to wait in the car, which I will forever be grateful for him for, because obviously going into this appointment wasn't quite what we expected. We started off seeing a nurse who then called in a doctor who then called in a consultant. And it wasn't until the consultant turned to me and said, are you okay? That I realized that maybe I shouldn't be okay. And that actually there was something quite sinister going on here and everything wasn't going to be as straightforward as we'd hoped. And then we went and had Imogen had a ultrasound eye exam, which I'm not going to go into detail, but it was horrendous. It was really tough for a bladder. And so I was holding her afterwards when the consultant turned to me and said, sorry.
Please do not apologise. I can't believe you were going through this on your own as well.
Well, he turned to me and he said that he was actually going to break the COVID rules for this and that he'd like me to call Mike in to talk to us both. And that is when you know, isn't it, that actually our Googling probably had pulled up the results that we were dreading. And he sat both Mike and I down and said that she's got bilateral retinoblastoma, which is a form of quite rare eye cancer in both of her eyes. So he went on to tell us that her right eye, which is the one that we could see, was different, actually had a very large tumour in it. So it's categorised up to grade E, with grade A being the least severe and grade E being potential loss of eye. And she was actually category E in her right eye. It had detached her retina so much that what we could see basically was the tumour. Her left eye was also affected. She had two quite large tumours in the middle of her eye with a couple else dotted around. It wasn't quite as bad as her right eye, which is a bit of a godsend, but we weren't really expecting both of them to be affected, if anything. So it was quite a bit of a shock. I think there's a lot of a blur is the rest of that appointment. I remember obviously feeling absolutely heartbroken, as in physically, I didn't know quite how we were ever going to recover from it. And I remember feeling quite angry straight away as well. I was quite shocked at how quickly the anger came. Whoever runs the show, how dare they give this to my daughter? How dare she have to go through anything like this, especially at her age? I was just furious at the world. Yeah, within the space of about 5 minutes, I think. So yeah, from this point on, they referred us to one of the two specialist teams in the UK. So there's one in one of the London hospitals and there's also a team up in Birmingham. Now we're based in South Wales, so Birmingham is technically closer. So we were referred to the team, the retinoblastoma team up in Birmingham, and we had an appointment to go and see them the following week. Imogen had an eye exam under laser and it was all confirmed. And they talked us through the next steps, which would include chemotherapy treatment for her. Luckily, that's able to be done down near us in Cardiff at our local hospital, rather than having to spend lots and lots of time up in Birmingham. So, yeah, we were just trying to get our heads around the fact that our 10-week-old daughter would suddenly have to go through chemotherapy, which is something that I don't think it was ever, ever on anyone's radar. You don't expect it to happen to you, to your friends, your family, but your baby. It just was awful. I don't think there's any words to describe it.
No, I totally get it. And, you know, for this to happen to anyone, like you say, is devastating. But especially after you'd gone through so much to get there. I don't know, does that, like even saying that, because I'm wondering, does that even come into it? Because it's devastating for anyone, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a really tricky thing. We get told quite a lot when we're in hospital, when we sort of explain about the journey we went on to bring Imogen home. They go, oh gosh, she must be extra special. She's extra precious. And for us, she is our world. She is extra special. She is extra precious. But for anyone, no matter what they've been through or haven't been through, to bring their child home safely, it is awful. It's the same. So I think there's never going to be any easy way. But I think for us, it was more, and it sounds really selfish to say this, but it was more, oh, why us at this point? We just didn't feel like we'd been able to have the time to rebuild our reserves back up after the journey that we'd been on to actually have Imogen. I think we just thought we'd have more time to enjoy being normal. I know there's no such thing, but enjoy, you know, a little bit of normality and to be able to kind of build ourselves back up again mentally and physically after, well, pregnancy loss, IVF, anxiety in the pregnancy. And yeah, I think 10 weeks isn't quite enough. It wasn't. It really wasn't.
I suspect never is not enough time. But I hear exactly what you're saying. You're totally discombobulated, aren't you, when you have a newborn. And to then go through that, your emotions and your hormones and your sleep-deprived mind and everything just must have been like all over the shop. And we talked before we started recording about, so something that I don't know why, like I will share at some point, it's like this is not a comparison thing, this is the way it makes you feel as a mother thing. That Ren has been diagnosed with hypermobility, and the reason that and she also walks, she really overpronates, and it's one of the reasons that she didn't walk until she was gone 18 months. And when I did finally put her in shoes to go outside, I actually, like, she walked on the insides of her ankles, and seeing that, like, I was alone in the park, it made me feel physically sick. And I ended up getting in touch with a neurophysio, and she came around the next day, and, you know, I had to see that again before then all of the different diagnoses being made. And it's hopefully something that won't impact Ren long term. Yeah. She has to wear special boots at the moment, which fortunately don't look like the special boots that probably I would have had to wear. She's got a nice little patent.
Super stylish.
Exactly. And insoles and other bits and pieces. But, you know, like, it won't have a huge impact, hopefully, on her life. Or I'm at least trying to kind of think that as time goes on, we'll just assess each time. But I remember being devastated by this. Now, I am going to say, by comparison, it's nothing, you know, but the devastation was still, you know, I felt it. And the reason for that was that I hadn't really thought about this before, I guess, but I realized at the time that anything that might hinder her life being as easy and as happy and as straightforward as possible, when something came in that might kind of shake that, I was devastated and just really upset and heartbroken for her as well as for me. And, you know, like, and it kind of drives you that you want to do everything you can. Like, I don't care how much these boots cost. I don't care. She's having three pairs and, you know, all of that kind of thing. And you just want to do everything you can, somewhat powerlessly in some ways. But tell me about your feelings around that diagnosis, because I can't, you know, like, that must have been so immense.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It is just, you wouldn't want your child to have to go through any kind of hardship. You want them to be able to grow up and do everything and be anyone that they want to be, and to not ever feel how horrible and scary the world is sometimes. And to then have to watch them go through any kind of treatment or any kind of diagnosis is just, you feel powerless, you feel absolutely helpless. Imogen had quite quickly, she had quite a lot of operations to do, things like fit her central line, which makes administering her chemo and taking blood a lot easier. She had a lumbar puncture and a bone marrow biopsy and an MRI all in the space of about 2 days. And just watching how, she was obviously, pain was managed, but how much she had to go through broke my heart even more. There wasn't a lot that myself or Mike could really do. He was allowed in for a couple of hours a day, which was a godsend, but we were just there and we would just hold her and try and make it better in any way that we could. I think for me personally, we've been able to breastfeed, which has been really, really crucial to our bond and our comfort for her. So whenever she's going through anything big, I can provide a little bit of comfort that way. And I know that's not for everyone, but for me, it's been a huge factor in making me feel like I can actually help in some way. And then through things like her chemotherapy, which especially her first round, she was really poorly after it. She had a lot of sickness. And thankfully, she hasn't been as bad on any of her other rounds. But that first round really took it out of her, I think, because she was so little and she'd already been through so much to get to that point that you do. You just feel powerless and you just want to do everything and anything to make it better for them. And I remember speaking to a friend and saying that throughout IVF and throughout all our pregnancy, our treatment and to have Imogen, all of that was happening to me and it was happening to my body. And so I kind of could deal with it because it was all focused around me and I could kind of work out what was best. But I kind of now have a little bit of a snapshot of what it might have been like for Mike to be a bystander and not be able to do anything or take any of that pain away. And I think that's been a bit eye-opening, if I'm completely honest.
Yeah, I totally hear that. I often think that it is easier if you're the person going through the kind of physical stuff. Like obviously partners are going through it emotionally. But yeah, physically, you take that on. And there's an element of feeling like you're doing something as well, I guess, that just like a practical element of that. So I totally understand what you're saying. And then also to think that this is happening to a baby as well, like a new baby. So where are we now? Because things are going well, aren't they? Where are we prognosis-wise and treatment-wise?
So last week, Imogen just went through her fourth round of chemotherapy. So we're on a bit of a three-week rolling rota at the moment. So every 3 weeks, we take a trip up to Birmingham, where Imogen has her eye exam under anaesthetic and has laser treatment on any of her tumours which have shrunk small enough. We then travel straight back down to Cardiff where her chemotherapy usually happens the next day. She is doing incredibly. I cannot put into words how proud I am of this girl. She is amazing. So she, like I said, she struggled round one with a lot of sickness, bless her, and she had to have a blood transfusion quite quickly after that just because of the effects of the chemotherapy. But since then, she has bossed every single round. She just takes it on the chin. And we normally have the day after chemo tends to be a bit rough for her. And so we have lots of cuddles and take it nice and steady. And she bounces back so quickly. So our consultant in Birmingham have said that they're really pleased with how her left eye, her good eye, her better eye, is responding to treatment. So they've managed to get rid of two of her tumours out of the four. And the other two are shrinking. And as they shrink, they are opening up some of her vision. Because they were situated right in the middle of her eye, it did cover a lot of her vision. But as they shrink down, it is opening up and we are hopeful that she will have some form of vision in that eye. Her right eye, again, they are pleased with the direction it's going in. It's proved a little bit trickier. The tumour is shrinking. It's actually, after chemotherapy round one, it shrunk by 90%, which is a ridiculous figure, but that is, we are so, so pleased. Because it detached her retina, we're having a little bit of a discussion around whether it's torn or whether it's just lifted and the next steps with regards to reattaching it. Imogen had a vision assessment on our last trip up to Birmingham and they've said that she doesn't have any sight in her right eye. She can see a little bit of light, but that's about it. And that's probably all she's going to be able to see out of that eye going forward, which at first is obviously absolutely devastating. But if we're looking for, I don't want to say the word positive here, but if we're looking at it practically, she would have never fully developed vision in the eye. She's so little that she's never going to miss it. And actually, the kids are so resilient. They adapt so quickly. And yeah, she won't know any different. And I'm confident that she'll be able to still go on and live her little happy life and do whatever she wants to do with or without vision in that right eye. I think as a consultant put it, she'll have eclectic vision, which I quite like that saying.
Yeah, I like that. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So she's got, the plan is two more rounds of chemotherapy. We're going to go up to six rounds and then assess where we are then. And there's other forms of treatment we can follow if needs be. We've had so much support from both Birmingham and Cardiff. They have been incredible, both teams. We've had a few hiccups in the road along the way. So Imogen tested positive for MRSA quite early on. So we've been a little bit of a to and fro trying to figure that out. But luckily it's not affected her at the moment. It's just managing it. But both teams, like I've said, have done really well with keeping on top of it. So yeah, so we're ticking along okay. She's doing well considering everything that's being thrown away, bless her.
Amazing. And how are you? And where are you receiving support from?
Yeah, I'm okay in the grand scheme of things. I don't want to sit here and say that it's all been plain sailing because it is an absolute roller coaster. And some days are easier than others. Sometimes that's just down to having a baby. Sometimes that's down to her diagnosis. Sometimes that's down to overwhelm and the amount of stuff that we're kind of trying to have to process. Recently, she's been fitted with a feeding tube. And I think that although that's the best thing for her to get her weight up and stop it dropping down, that has been a huge, huge thing for me to get my head around, especially because feeding was my job. that's what I could do to help her. So there's been a lot of work, a lot of talking to different people around that and getting my head around there. We've received so much support, not only from family and friends who they rallied around from day one. They've been amazing, especially in the COVID era that we're in at the moment and having to be locked down. We haven't been able to visit family and get support physically, but there's been a lot of phone conversations and a lot of support sent our way, which has been amazing. We've also had a lot of support from some of the charities that work closely with both Cardiff's Children's Hospital, where Imogen receives her chemotherapy treatment, as well as the Childhood Eye Cancer Trust called CHECT. So the Childhood Eye Cancer Trust provides everything from information and support to counselling, to grants, and so much more. And they work predominantly with families of children diagnosed with retinoblastoma. And they have done a lot of research into it, and they are constantly pushing for more funding to do more research to help with treatments as well. I recently had a phone call counselling session through them, which was really beneficial just to be able to kind of talk to someone who understood the logistics of it all. They've been an absolute huge help, and they provide a social worker for the family as well that you've got constant access to when things get a bit tough, or if you get a bit lost with all the medical jargon, or you just need someone to say, you know, you're doing a good job, you know, keep going. They're on the end of the phone, which is amazing. And like I said, the other charity that have been a huge help is Latch. It's called Latch Wales, and they work specifically with the oncology department in the Children's Hospital in Cardiff. And they, again, they provide everything from grants to help with travel costs and accommodation when we travel up to Birmingham. They also provide a social worker who we've been lucky enough to actually meet face to face.
Yay!
Which is huge at the moment because you don't get to see anyone. so we've been able to meet a social worker who's talked us through, and she's met Imogen, which I think makes such a huge difference. They also provide at Latch, they have family accommodation on the floor above the ward, which in non-COVID times provides somewhere for families to stay so that they can be together, because it's such an isolating experience at the best of times. And I think there are families from all across Wales who are sent to Cardiff Children's Hospital, Noah's Ark Children's Hospital. So to have that provision there is just so, so useful. Obviously, it's on reduced capacity at the moment because of everything going on, but it is fundamental to keeping families together, especially for children who are on the ward for very long periods of time. So they provide that as well, alongside the tea and coffee and the biscuits in the parents' room, which, do you know what? I think that's one of the best things going. So they are amazing.
We have to keep you fueled for sure for all exactly. That you are going through. Oh, my goodness, Lorna. It's just incredible, like your story so far. And one of the things I was thinking then, like one of the really incredible things is you're going through all of this. And actually, and I'm gonna make sure that we talk about this, because you have already, like, you raised money for the Miscarriage Association when you were going through your trying to conceive journey. And you are going through all of this. And tell me, how old is Imogen right now?
She's just turned 5 months.
So this has all happened in the last kind of, you know, 3-4 months.
3 months.
And you have already started fundraising for Latch Wales. And I know that Ren very proudly owns a Team Immy t-shirt. So tell people where they can get this, and what they can get to support you and support the charity that's supporting you.
Yeah. So I've got a lovely friend, Carly at Whistle Street, who provided some amazing Team Immy t-shirts and baby grows, which help raise money for Latch. So these t-shirts, you can either get one which has got the slogan Team Immy on it, or you can get one which has a slogan Give Blood on it. And £5 from each t-shirt goes towards the charity. And we've already raised, I think, about £250 for Latch, which is incredible. And what these t-shirts do is they not only provide a bit of a talking point, and people ask, you know, what's Team Immy? And we can get the message of retinoblastoma out there, because it is such a rare childhood cancer, but also they help people to think about donating blood. So throughout Imogen's treatment and a lot of chemotherapy treatments, it can affect your blood count. And like I said, after round one, Imogen did have to have a blood transfusion. And we will be forever in debt for that amazing person who donated a blood, who possibly just popped down to get a free biscuit afterwards. But it made the world a difference to us and to Imogen. And so we're trying to get the message out there that if you're fit and able to, and you can, to go out there and give blood, because it can really help. So yeah, so they've designed these amazing t-shirts, these Team Immy t-shirts, which hopefully will go a little way towards spreading the word and helping out a few different causes.
Brilliant. And I will put the links to pretty much everywhere and everyone you've mentioned into the show notes. There's one other thing that you shared recently about it's a baby grow, because Immy's wearing a central line. And yes. So talk to me about that, because I think, like you've talked, or I've gleaned from what you've mentioned, you know, there's just some things that just make life a bit easier, you know, and that's what you need, isn't it? Like, because you've got a big thing that you're going through. So anything, any little thing that can help that must have quite a big impact at the moment. So, and these baby grows make it easier for the central line to be kind of attached.
Yeah, accessed. Right? So yeah, so Imogen has a central line, a Hickman line, which is basically a tube which goes into her chest, which means that they could administer her chemotherapy treatment and take bloods all without too much hassle, I say. Now, anyone that's got a baby will know that undressing and redressing at this point she was 2.5 months old when she first had it, is just an absolute nightmare. And we found throughout our treatment that it's just been such a faff trying to find things that she can wear that keep her little hands away from the central line, because obviously at that age they're grabbing everything and anything, and it's a constant fear for me that she's going to pull this central line out, and also that will keep her warm while she's in the hospital, while she's having treatment. And I searched for about a month trying to find something, anything that would cover the central line but also provide access to it for when we go into hospital. And there's an amazing company called Guinevere's who provide little warrior vests, and they come in all sorts of different patterns. So Imogen's got four, and she's got things from puffins, dinosaurs, unicorns, and little woodland creatures on her. So they are designed for, you know, children, which in a medical world, I think that's really important, that they get to still be kids and babies and children. And it's got a little pocket on the inside, which means that we can tuck the central line out the way in there, so it's not close to her nappy if she has any lovely poo explosions. It's also away from her little hands as well. But then it's also got at the top a little bit of a Velcro opening. I'm doing the actions here and I know people can't see me. It's got a little Velcro opening so that when you need to access the central line, you can just gently pull it up and attach it to her drip for the chemotherapy. And it just, I can't explain how much easier it's made her last round. And we showed them off to the hospital and they'd never seen anything like it before. So I think it's such a niche in the market that they've managed to design. And unfortunately it is because the woman who designs them, her son went through chemotherapy treatment. But I think having that inside knowledge of what is needed and what is missing is really important. So they've been an absolute godsend, and I've been shouting from the rooftops about them to anyone and everyone that will listen.
Brilliant. We're just like, yeah. And that's the reason I wanted you to talk about it, is so that other people don't have to trawl the internet for, like you say, a month, and can just have access to things like this as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Lorna, you have got, like you said, or Immy has got, I guess, all of you have got the next couple of rounds of chemo ahead before you then reassess. I know that this is going to be a kind of a fairly long road for you, and something that might impact Immy for the rest of her life. But as you say, children are resilient, and she will adapt, and like she's still going to live a very, very
She is going to just do everything and anything she wants to do. She's incredible. I feel like I haven't spoken enough about her. It's all been like how it's affected me, but she just, I can't praise her enough. She's an absolute superstar.
Oh, wonderful. I can't wait to give her a cuddle at some point when this is all over and I'm back down in South Wales for
sure. Exactly.
Can't wait. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Well, thank you.
And you just, yeah, you're incredible. You really are.
She's an incredible one, but thank you.
You both are. And Mike as well. He's pretty bloody incredible as well.
Throw the dog in there as well and then we're all covered.
Exactly. But I'm just sending you all of my love. I really am. And and a huge virtual hug. Right.
Thank you.
All right then, my love. I'll see you later.
Bye.